This is the opening of our group of Bereshit Aviva. We'll study tonight Le'ilui Nishmosa. Yivodol L'chaim Tov Meruchim. Aaron Chai was a friend of Aviva Aryeh. And when I asked her to describe to me the uniqueness of Aviva Aryeh, so she described to me the meat that we're going to discuss tonight. The meat of a person who was an Ayin Tov, a young woman who excelled in her ability to look at things in a positive light. And a person whose perspective was seemed to be well beyond her years, in only having good things to say about other people and her own situation. And that's the Nida of Ayin Tov, or Ayin Tov that we're asked to speak about tonight. One of the great Hasidic masters, Elimelech Milizensk. So one of the tefillos, one of the prayers that he would express, I think daily, when he finished his davening, was he would say, Yiten v'libeinu shenira kol achad ma'alas chavreinu v'lo chesronu. That as we leave the Beis HaMedrash, we leave the davening, so Kadosh Baruch Hu should help us, that we should be able to see the good traits of other people, the malos of other people, their attributes, and we shouldn't see the chesronos, the lapses that other people have, the failings that other people have. And that is catches, and we'll discuss three different levels of Ayin Tov, but this level of Ayin Tov catches an important part of Torah, and an important part of Torah culture. Because to be able to see the good of other people means that we're trying to live in such a way that we don't compete with other people. We don't compete in the things that are not so important. Gemara says that the one area where it's mutter to have, it's permissible to be competitive, is in wisdom, in the service of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Kinas so from Tarva Chochma. A person should be competitive if they see that somebody else has certain attributes, but another person is able to have a great kavana during davening. A person should try to aspire to their kavana. A person's able to carve out time to study Torah. A person's able to have the patience to always be responsive to their children. A person is a very good child towards their parents. So we should that is where it's permissible to have kinna, to be competitive, to be jealous of somebody else. Kinna sofrim tarbe chokhma. Because Baruch Hu created a world where if we are jealous of other people's accomplishments and pursuits in the spiritual form of life, so then the world becomes a better place. If a person becomes competitive in the materialistic aspects of life, so that becomes destructive and it squelches a person's spiritual growth and a person's growth to be able to become a better person. So this tefillah, Yiten libeinu shenira kol achad ma'alas chavreinu, we should be able to see the attributes of other people, the positive sides, so that is aspiring for a life without being competitive. Aspiring for a life where we enjoy the good attributes and accomplishments of other people, and we try to aspire to their accomplishments. Rav Chaim Volozhiner made the following comment at the very end of Parshas, at the very end of Sefer Bereishis, the beginning of Parshas Vayechi. So we're all familiar with the story that Yosef brought his two sons, Menashe and Ephraim. He brought them to Yaakov Avinu, and we all know that Yaakov Avinu flipped his hands, Sikel es yadov. He flipped his hands to give the better bracha, so to speak, to the younger child. And the Torah describes in detail how when Yosef brought the two sons, he lined them up so that the older son would be next to the right hand of Yaakov Avinu, and the younger son would be next to the left hand of Yaakov Avinu. And nevertheless, Yaakov Sikel es yadov. Sikel is a strange phrase. Sikelus Yadav means He did a wise move with his hands. So Chaim Lesner explains that the way that Kadosh Baruch Hu made us is that when I stand opposite a person, so my right hand is opposite their left hand. And when I stand, and my left hand is opposite their right hand. Is that the natural inclination of a person is to, because we are naturally competitive, is to have our right hand next to the weaknesses of somebody else. We like to trump our own strengths. Because if I have a certain strength in somebody else's weaker area, so I feel better about myself. And our left hand is near their right hand, our natural response is to downplay somebody else's strength, and it makes me feel better about myself if I can feel stronger in their weaker areas. So Yaakovinu sikeles yadav. He gave us an important insight. The insight is that when we relate to others, we should extend our right to their right. In other words, we should try to play up somebody else's strengths. We should try to make their strengths more important. And we should try to aspire to their strengths. And our left extends to their left. We should try to downplay their weaknesses. That's the tefillah of Yitin B'Livenu, Shenira Kolechot Malach Chavreinu. We should be able to see, sometimes because we're naturally defensive, and we are naturally poised this is the way people are, the way our culture certainly is, we are naturally poised to be competitive, so we are naturally poised to try to feel out our strengths, and naturally poised to, even if we don't express it, but in our mind to see the weaknesses of others. So we have to, it's a midah that a person has to work on. That's part of the midah of being done l'kol odom l'kaf sechus. And this is an important exercise. We often point this out before Yomim Neirom, that the Mishnah describes don l'kol odom, a person should judge somebody else in a positive way. And the Gemara tells a famous story, I'm sure you're familiar with it, review it briefly. Several stories, but one story is where a person was working very hard the entire season, and towards the end of the season, it was before Yom Tov, the owner of this these large fields said, I have to send you home empty-handed, I don't know what to pay, I don't have any funds for you. And the fellow is obviously disappointed, he's going to go home to his family after a season, has nothing to bring home, and the owner of the field said, when you come back, I'll be able to take care of you then. Anyways, Tachave, the person went home, empty-handed, somehow he put together a Yom Tov. After the Yom Tov season, he comes back, and the owner of the field pays him. So he says to him, the owner says to his worker, he says, you're a very loyal worker. When you left, and I said I couldn't pay you, so you must have thought I was a liar. We just finished a season, we just brought in various fields. So he said, so what were you thinking? So he said, well, I assumed that you had already sold the produce. There was you did an early deal. And probably, once you sold the produce, you were able to give it to me. So he said, that's the way it was. But he said, if that's the case, I should have cash, I should have funds. He's like, I probably figured that your vendors, the people that you were selling to, hadn't come up with the cash yet. So he said, that really was the way it is, but I had lots of animals, and so why didn't you expect me to sell some animals? So he said, well, I assumed that your animals you had already promised to be korbanos. And so on, and that's how he goes, and the owner says that you've called everything correctly. And that's the midah of being done la'odam l'kaf sechus, to think of a person in a positive light. And that's to an extreme. But you see from that Gemara that the Gemara doesn't want us to simply walk away and say, probably the person's a good person. But it wasn't expected, because Baruch Hu wanted more. The midah of to see people in a positive light would not simply have been satisfied if the worker would have gone home and said, you know, my employer is a good man, he probably has good reasons for what he did. Probably, and I'm not going to question it. apparently the Mida requires having done Lekol Adam. You're supposed to actually think it out. You're supposed to actually think of what, why is this person not paying me with the cash that he has? And try to work it out in a way that you really do have a way of justifying and understanding what the person is. And that's done Lekol Adam, Lekaf Sechus means done. Actually judge them, not dismiss it. That's a good Mida as well. To be able to dismiss somebody else's seeming failings and not be upset by it. But there's even a higher Mida, I mean the next step, in saying, well, I'm going to try to figure out exactly why this person wasn't able to come through for me. And that's the Mida of Don Lekol Adam, that's based on such a healthy sense of respect for other people. Sometimes we're disappointed, but usually the Tzelem Elokim, usually Kadosh Baruch Hu's Bria, usually creatures usually come through in a way that if we understand and if we look at them in a positive way, that our positive judgment is usually rewarded in a good way. So that's the first idea of an Ayin Tov, that to try to focus on a person's positive attributes, to try to see the malos. Everybody has malos, everybody has positive attributes, everybody's doing things that are very important, that are very valuable. So even if sometimes we trip across, or sometimes we suffer from a person's lapses or pauses, so that's very often we can see a person's malos when we look at ourselves. Right? We often always see ourselves in a positive light. We're often able to always see our own malos. Sometimes it's a worthwhile exercise to see how sometimes a person would look at yourself and how you may appear to somebody else. How somebody else may not see everything that is going on in your life, and somebody, if they just see a piece of your life, would be disappointed and be upset. If they would see that small piece fits into what else is going on, then they would understand things. Sometimes, just this week, that somebody from Eretz Yisrael was calling me and began calling me on Sunday, and he needed something which I was, was committed to provide for him. So in my mind, I really had taken care of the situation, and he was very persistent. He's a lovely man, and he called probably twice every day since Sunday. And Eretz Yisrael, it's a little bit hard to match up the times exactly when to call. I can't call from yeshiva because I can't call outside of the metropolitan area from yeshiva. And if I use my cell phone, it's very, very expensive. And in the morning, I have to prepare shurim at night very often. I'm tired. I'm meeting with you the last few days. I wasn't able to return his call. And I was only able to get back to him this morning. Again, he was very good about it. But I see all these things. I see that I don't have a phone at yeshiva. I'm there all day. I can't call Eretz Yisrael. I see that my cell phone, if I call Eretz Yisrael, becomes very, very expensive. I see that at night I can be very, very tired. I'm not able to... I see that if in the morning I start having phone calls, I can't prepare yeshiva. But from his perspective, he's calling twice a day from Eretz Yisrael. So I can't pick up a phone call and say... And make a time to meet him. I know that it doesn't work. It's very hard to call someone and say, I'll speak to you later on. Usually when you call, that's the conversation. So I see all of these things, right? But from his perspective, he could look at it as, I don't have a moment for him, right? Sometimes, there's a comment by one of the Telzer Rosh Yeshivas that when one gets an invitation, right, it's an RSVP invitation. So we all very often, we get an invitation, and now it's not just, when I'm opening the mail, it's not just the best time to respond, so it goes by the side, right? So the Telzer Rashiva once said, he says he doesn't understand why people RSVP late. He says they give you a card, they put a small line, yes or no, they put a stamp on the envelope, the address is there, not even the return address is there, right? It's a matter of 2 seconds, right? And nevertheless, so everything comes back in the last minute or even after the deadline, right? So that's one way of looking at it. The other way of looking at it is you get the card, you have to discuss with your spouse whether you can make it or not. You have to figure out if there's going to be a babysitter available or not. You don't want to say yes and call later on and say no, or say no and say yes. So that's havidon l'kol odom. L'kol odom means try to look at the, if one looks at the whole picture, we see the whole picture of ourselves. So when we have to look at the malos of somebody else, so it means first we can train ourselves by thinking about our own malos, and how we see our own lives, and how sometimes we see that somebody else is disappointed in us because they don't see everything. That if we train ourselves to be able to switch perspectives from time to time, that becomes a valuable exercise in being able to see somebody else's malos. Now the idea of Ayin Tov will now shift to another level of Ayin Tov. The idea is introduced to us in a Mishnah. Mishnah in the second Perek of Pirkei Avos, Perek based Mishnah Tes. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai had many, many students. He was extremely proud of five of his students. Chamisha, in fact, the Mishnah, he was so proud, these were his five Talmidim. And one of his students that stood out in his mind, maybe even the most outstanding, Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, as you're familiar with, he asked all his five Talmidim, Tzu'u uru'u ezri derech yisharam, sheyidbak ba adam. Tell me, what is the best route to take, and that's the route that a person should pursue and try to work at very carefully. So Eliezer ben Hyrcanus came back with the phrase, Ayin Tova. He said, the worst thing a person can do is be an Ayin Ra, and the best thing and the most important mida is an Ayin Tova. What does it mean to have an Ayin Tov, to have a good eye? So we said in one level, an Ayin Tov is to look at people in a good fashion. Rabbi Yonah, when he explains Ayin Tova, he says Ayin Tova, he puts it in a broader term, is a person who is generous of spirit, nedivos lev. He's a generous person, and the way that he looks at people, as we said, is in a generous way. The question is, why is this the most important midah? That of everything he chooses, an ayin tov. So some have suggested that this becomes an important attribute to establish within our relationship with the Rabbona Shalom. And if we have an ayin tov when it comes to other people, so then it'll work out well in terms of our spiritual growth as well. Some have suggested, the Chasam Sofer suggests, that Moshe Rabbeinu, in 2 weeks, will read Parshas Kisisa. So Moshe Rabbeinu has this moment when he can ask the Kadosh Baruch Hu for anything. Right? Kadosh Baruch Hu was open at that time. After the Chen Hegel, Moshe Rabbeinu was davening for Klal Yisrael. Kadosh Baruch Hu was going to forgive Moshe Rabbeinu. So Moshe Rabbeinu takes the shot and says, Har'eini nos kavodcha. And the Kadosh Baruch Hu responds by saying that, I can't do that for you. I'll let you see things from behind, but not up front. So what does that mean? Many interpretations. Chassam says the following. He suggests, Moshe Rabbeinu says, I'd like to understand things. There's a lot of so many tzaras going on. Rachmanel son, a person is nifted very, very young. A person has different tzaras. People are ill. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, Harbeinu nos kavod, I'd like to see kavod shemayim. Sometimes we don't get a chance to see it, because it's Baruch Hu's glory. We see very, very difficult things. Sometimes we spend lives davening for the improvement of things. Harbeinu nos kavod, I'd like to see kavod shemayim. I'd like to see in these difficult things, explain to me where is the Kadosh Baruch Hu's greatness. So Kadosh Baruch Hu says, I can't do that. V'ra'isa achurai. There'll be times when after the fact, you'll be able to understand things. But I can't assure you that as things are happening, you're going to be able to understand things. As achurai, sometimes you'll be able to, that's an important exercise. When we do have that insight, and to be able to look backwards and seeing how things worked out, it's so important to do so. Because that trains us to have an ayin tov, to be able to have this nedivos lev, to be of generous spirit towards the Rabbona Shel Olam, and only towards other people. I was thinking that one of the important exercises is the Birchas HaGomel. What do we say when we make the Birchas HaGomel? A person was saved. A person makes the Birchas HaGomel when, Rachmanel Shel, they were in a very, very scary situation. Right? In a situation where they thought there was a Sakonis Nefashos. They may not have pulled through the situation. They were, Rachmanel Shel, very sick. They were, or sometimes you have to appreciate that we are in precarious situations without realizing. The person could take a cruise in the high seas. They have to realize they are in a precarious, they're allowed to put themselves in a precarious situation. A person flies overseas, they're allowed to be in a precarious situation, but they have to realize that they were in a precarious situation. A person, Rachmanel Shel, is very sick and Baruch Hashem comes through. A person is driving and Rachmanel Shel, has a near miss. So what do we say? So we say, "Gomel achayodim tovos." What does that mean? It means that I'm looking at myself as having been chayav. Hagomel achayodim. Kodesh Baruch Hu said to me that you really, you deserve, he said to me, you deserve to lose. Right? That's what we're saying. That's the vantage point. Right? When we say, "Thank you, Kodesh Baruch Hu, for saving me." So we do it by giving staka. We do it by having a Sudas Hedoya. We do it by marking the date. But what was the Nusach Chazal gave us? Hagomel, because Baruch Hu take care of us. Lechayovim, to a person who is chayiv. That's why Halacha L'Masa, there's a discussion whether if Rachmanot, when the child was very ill, when the child became better, do you make a Birchas Hagomel? So there are poskim who say that you actually change the Nusach. Hagomel, you say Hagomel, Livni, Livniti, and so on. Now, Valdeberg said, this is the way that we paskin over here, that you can't say the bracha. For a young child is not chayav, the child is not bar bas mitzvah, he's never chayav misa. But that's what the bracha means. The bracha means that I really believe, hagomil achayavim, I was chayav something, the Kodesh Baruch Hu could have, if the Kodesh Baruch Hu would have demanded to Rachmanachan to come through, then I would have been chayav. Then I would have been, it would have been a fair and just, it would have been a dynamic. But Tovos, as Rachel did me a favor. Hagomel achayavim Tovos, as the person says. And the whole Tzibur says, Mishnah Gmokh, because Rachel took care of you, she should continue to take care of you. But that's what the Rachel is saying. That is the Akiyum of the Reis Achurai. Afterward, so the Chazal give us an exercise. Because if a person wants to develop the perspective that we're supposed to have, is that's how you develop the perspective. A person goes through a situation, that situation has a sakonas nefesh attached to it. We may have been allowed to put ourselves in, we may have had to put ourselves into it. But after it's over, so you stop for a moment and say, because Rahu took care of it. That's what he said, Yiddish is a phrase. The phrase is called an upcomingist. That means that we should, if something happens to a person, and they, Baruch Hashem came through. So the idea that the Jewish way of looking at it is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu took the daiga. There was a moment when we had a heart in our mouth. There was a moment that could have been days, could have been months, where we had daiga, so we were nervous. HaKadosh Baruch Hu may have taken something away from us. It's very precious to us. So that we say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did us a tova. Instead of suffering the most difficult kind of suffering, he took the aggravation, the pain that it caused as a korban in its place. But that's a perspective. That's an ayin tov. A person could walk away from the same situation and say, "What a pachad! I had to go through this terrible fright, this terrible scare." A person could walk away and saying, "Why did Kodesh Baruch Hu put me into this situation? Why did I have to be so nervous? Why did I have to live through this scare?" That would be an entirely human response. And Chazal teach us to have an ayin tov, that the ra'is achurai, that we can look back at something and we can look at it in an entirely different perspective. Kodesh Baruch Hu could have taken us, and Kodesh Baruch Hu did us a tremendous tov and took a korban from us. He took us the daigas, the years that a person may have lost in that pachad, right, the gray hair they may have gotten in that pachad, Kodesh Baruch Hu took it as a kapara. That's how we develop an ayin tov, by making a birchas hagomel. For the famous Rashi, the Rashi says at the beginning of Parshas Chayisara that we all know the pasuk is phrased in a strange way, that Sarah lived 100 years and 20 years and 7 years. So Rashi quotes the drasha that the 7 years at seven, she was like 27. At the end, Rashi says, "Kulam shavim latova." They were all great years. How could Rashi say all great years? Sorry, man had great years. Sorry, man who suffered for years and years and years having a child. Then she suffered by bringing Hagar into the family, and then she had to deal with Yishmael. Right, Tzori Meinu lost her life because they brought her son as a korban. That's really cool and shoving Latova. But that's Tzori Meinu. Tzori Meinu, after it was all over, she was able to see that through years of infertility, apparently she was able to grow from it, and those years, in fact, contributed to who she was. That Tzori Meinu was able to to see at the tzorah she had, whether it was in Mitzrayim, or whether it was because of the famine, whatever it was, that's kulon shavim l'tova. She almost looked back at it, and at that point, look at it, and that's the idea of an ayin tova. The Mishnah of it says in Perek Hey, that a person was an ayin tova, mi talmidei Avraham Avinu. It's one of the talmidim of Avraham Avinu. So that, I think, points at a very important idea. We express it every so often, the name of Matisyo Salman, the Mashkiach in Lakewood. He says that we, since our earliest years, we have learned the Medrash that how did Avraham Avinu teach the Kadosh Baruch Hu? He had his kiosk out in the middle of a desert. He had the Arabs, whoever was walking by, the Bedouins walking by. He then took them in out of the hot sun. They were probably famished. They were starving. And he gave them what to eat. And when he gave them what to eat, he said, you know who's giving you this food? And he taught them about God, and he made them make a bracha. At first glance, it sounds like a terrible gimmick, right? This is the way to bring people close to Kadosh Baruch Hu. And you take the most vulnerable people. They're in the desert. They have no water. They don't eat. They're under the hot sun. And then you give them a little bit of shelter and shade. And then when at their weakest moment, so then you say, all right, now we want them to be frum. That sounds like a Jonestown, right? That sounds like a very cultish act. So Rav Salman said that could not be what Avraham was doing. We would not admire Avraham Avinu. We wouldn't hold him up to be the great Baal Chesed because he took advantage of people's weaknesses. He suggests that he would say, when people came in, he would give them a perspective of things. He would say, you know, you've been out in the desert. How did you end up over here? In the desert, there weren't roads. There weren't road signs. There weren't any signs of Eshel Avraham, how close you are to Avraham's tent. There weren't. So how did you end up near my tent? In the desert, you could be hundreds of miles away from here. Your caravans would have taken you far away. So how is it, and there aren't any other Avraams in the desert. There aren't any other tents in the desert. So you could have been walking for days and for days and for days and with no shade, with no food, with no nourishment. So that's what he would tell the people walking by. So he would give them a different perspective that Kadosh Baruch Hu, there must be some other force in the world. There must be something else going on that brought this person. That's giving a person an ayin tov when it comes to the Rabbonu Shel Olam. So first we discussed there's an ayin tov, and that is to be able to look at other people's good qualities. There's an ayin tov when it comes to looking at ourselves vis-a-vis the Rabbonu Shel Olam. And there's an ayin tov, Rabbeinu Yonah says that ayin tov is to have a lev, to have nadiva lev, be a generous person. Again, generous does not just mean giving funds, it means to look at people in a generous way. And the lev pasuach l'chol davar. And what's the benefit of being a generous person? You become an open person. You become a person who's willing to see things from other people, learn from other people, because you have such a positive outlook the way things go. Now, Rav Eliezer ben Hyrcanus gave us this idea of an ayin tov. The story of Rav Eliezer ben Hyrcanus is an amazing story in and of itself. Rav Eliezer ben Hyrcanus is one of the great, great Baalei Tshuva of Klal Yisrael. Rav Eliezer ben Hyrcanus himself was, some say 22, others say 28, before he opened up a sefer. He was the heir to a very, very substantial and significant business, and apparently he was married, he had children already, and he goes to his father, and the Gemara does not tell us what happened, but he goes to his father and he says, I had this idea, I'm an unlettered person, I'd like to study Torah. So Hyrcanus says, you're 28, right? You already have a family. It's a ridiculous thing to do. You stay in work, and if this is such an important thing, so your children will learn. So Hyrcanus is very distraught. First he took his father's advice. He's very, very distraught. But then Eliyahu appears to him and encourages him. And he says, if this is where your heart's taking you, right? So Eliezer goes to his father, and he says, I'm leaving. I'm going. And he goes to the, in fact, Eliyahu tells him, if you really want to learn, the address is Rav Yechon ben Zakkai. So apparently he leaves wherever he is and goes to Rav Yechon ben Zakkai's Beis HaMedrash, and he dedicates himself. He didn't take it. His father wouldn't give him any funds. His father didn't give him any money to leave with. He was on his own. And the Gemara explains that Rav Yechon ben Zakkai had Eliezer Nerkens close to him. He has a probably a brilliant mind. As you know, the Mishnah says he was the person about whom we say Bor Sid Eino Ma'abe Tipa. He was like a lined cistern with lime. Doesn't lose a drop. So anything Rav Mazaka said, he knew it all. He became probably the Gadol Hador. Eliezer ben Hyrcanus is the person who later on in life took on the entire Beis HaMedrash. Right, the Gemara is Bar Mitzvah Memches, familiar with the story, that there was this debate whether some Avinus Torah Tomei. Everybody else said that it was Tar, and he was in the minority, so it was Tomei. He's the one that said that if I'm right, then the walls of the basement should begin to cave in, and began to cave in. And if I'm right, then the river should run upstream, and it ran upstream. And so he was right. In the end, he was, we all know his beam. He was, because we have halacha that says you go with the majority. But that was who Eliezer ben Hyrcanus was. And he stood his ground until the last day. He was really excommunicated. And he still had a life with his family. It's a different kind of excommunication. And people would come to him. But he was, to great extent, ostracized. But the beginning of his life, he was standing next to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. He was literally next to him. And this is his prize student, one of his prize students. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, he smells a terrible odor coming from Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus. So he didn't know what it was. So he asked some of the friends, and they said, well, we'll follow home, we'll see what he has for lunch and for supper. And he saw he didn't have anything for lunch or supper. He had nothing. He was eating dirt. And that's, he was fasting. We have a bad odor at the end of a tainus. This is, he was living with a tainus. So then Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said that he would bring him in and make sure the people took care of him. That's he was the person who gave us this idea of an ayin tov, and as Rabbi Yochanan says, then leiv pasuach l'chol dover. Apparently, if Eliezer ben Hyrcanus is telling us, if he would not have been an open person, if he would not have been able to see beyond himself, so he would never be who he was. He would never be able to leave home. He'd never be taken by something. Right? The person who doesn't have that kind of generous spirit, that's able to see beyond his own confines, so he's not going to move on. So Eliezer ben Hyrcanus said he is who he is because he was able to see the good in other people, the good in other things, and it created such a generous spirit within himself that he was able to find almost a different life. How does one train oneself to have these important midos, to be a generous spirit, to be a person who sees the good in other people? The highest level of ayin tov, the highest level is a very, very difficult madrega to reach, but the highest level is to actually want for other people even the things that we ourselves don't have. The Ramban writes, in the pasuk of V'yahavta Re'acha Kamocha, it doesn't say V'yahavta Es Re'acha, it's V'yahavta Li Re'acha. So Ramban explains that what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to aspire to, and it's a very, very difficult madrega, he wants us to aspire to actually want for other people everything, all the brachos, right? To be a person with no sense of no competitive spirit. I want whatever that person wants. The Ramban says very often a person can get themselves to madrega where they can say, I'd like the other person to be a wise, wise person. Right? But I should be richer than them. Or the other way around. I'd love the person to be wealthy, to be rich, to have a beautiful place. I would like to be smarter. Right? In our own minds, we're willing to, the word in Yiddish is forgive, willing to forgive that somebody else should have lots, but something I should have better than them. The nida of the Yahavta Yahav Kamocha is, it's an unusual, it's a very difficult nida to achieve, is that a person says, I'm happy they have everything. They should achieve more than I have in anything and be happy for them. It's a very difficult nida. The model for this nida was Aaron HaKohen. When Moshe Rabbeinu comes back to Mitzrayim, so Moshe Rabbeinu did not want to take the Jews out of Mitzrayim, and he argued with Hashem for 7 days, and the first day he says, I'm not really worthy of it. Secondly, I'm not really worthy of it. Finally, because Rachel gets upset with him. And the last day, there's one more day of argument. So that's when it came out what was really bothering Moshe Rabbeinu. What was bothering Moshe Rabbeinu is he says, you know what, you have Aaron. He's in Mitzrayim. He lived with the Jews there. He is a Navi already. You don't need me, you have Aaron. And the Mefarshim explained that we understand from Kadosh Baruch Hu's response. The response was, you'll go to Mitzrayim, Aaron will come, v'ra sechicha, v'samach. He says, Aaron will see you and he'll be happy for you. He'll come, he is the Navi, he is the leader, his younger brothers are going to come and upstage him, he will be excited. He'll be excited that you're coming. And that's what Moshe came in. And the Mefarshim explained that Moshe was very, very well based in what he was thinking, because until this point, we suffered terribly because the younger brother upstaged the older brother, right? Without failing. Yitzchak and Yishmael, and Yaakov and Esav, right? And Yosef and his brothers. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, God, why are we doing this again, right? We had a whole sefer, but this didn't work. So now we're going to set a new sefer, and once again, we're going to upstage Aaron, it'll be the same story over again. So the Baruch Hu assures him that Aaron HaKohen is different. That Aaron HaKohen is wants and will be happy for somebody else. The Yavetz writes, Yaakov Emden writes, this is such a rare midah that a person who is able to achieve this midah, to want for his friend even more than he has, he says that's Neshama Elyona. To actually achieve that kind of adrega, that means that a person has a Neshama that really comes, is spiritually touched in a different way than other people. But how does one begin to achieve these levels of Ayin Tov? And as we said, Ayin Tov is important in terms of our relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. But how does one begin? So the Rambam writes one word in Ayin Tov. He says, Histapkus. Histapkus means to work on oneself, to be satisfied with what one has. Right? And if you think about it, you see what the Rambam is saying. If an Ayin Tov means that a person they vest themselves of the competitive spirit, so how do I become less of a competitive person? It's not because I have what I need. Some of the Svarim on the Mishnah say that for this reason, an Ayin Tov is tests or measures a person's trust in a Kadosh Baruch Hu, certain belief in a Kadosh Baruch Hu. That a person who is unsuccessful in acquiring an Ayin Tov means that they, deep down, they haven't accepted or haven't inculcated in themselves, haven't internalized that whatever Kadosh Baruch Hu provides for me, that's really what I'm supposed to have. Whatever he's given to me, how he's taking care of me, I can daven for everything. But ultimately, if I make decisions that deprive me of things, that's my decision. I decide not to work, I can't rail against HaKadosh Baruch Hu for not being able to feed my family. Right? And if I decide to put myself out less than is normal or average, so then I've taken those decisions. But if I'm doing what I'm supposed to do, so after that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu provides with what I need, what I'm supposed to have. How he provides many, many different ways. But ultimately, an Ayin Tov, Histapkus, becomes a measure of a person's emunah, a person's ability to say hagomel lechayovim tova. So now, if we think about it, there are probably two ideas that we should focus on quickly. And one is, again, what is the method that a person has to achieve an ayin tov? And number two, something which bothers me all the time, and that isn't an ayin tov dangerous? Right? Isn't it good to be a little bit discerning? A little bit cynical, right? In other words, let's say you're raising your children, right? So if you raise your children that everything that everybody's doing is good, right? So aren't you going to lose out, right? Aren't your children going to grow up to think if you train your children to look at everybody with Ayin Tov, so they'll see a person who's stingy, right? So you'll train them to say, well, you know, if they're really stingy, perhaps they're giving money in some other venue. Perhaps they grew up in a very, very difficult situation, so they themselves don't have the sense of security to be able to share. Perhaps they were never trained to share. So then aren't we trained? It's okay. This also is okay. Person, very often happens. The people of relatives are not Shomer Mitzvahs, not Shomer Shabbos. So how do you train your child to be, have an ayin tov? They're not machal Shabbos because they're not shomer Shabbos. They were never had the gift of Shabbos. They were never trained to be able to keep Shabbos. They come from a background where Shabbos is oppressive. Shabbos is difficult for them. They didn't understand. They were never raised with a sense of how Kadosh Baruch Hu was taking care of them, right? But at the same time, you're training your child to be, everything's good, right? So aren't we nervous? Isn't there a danger in being overly? I often look at different models of parenting, and I subscribe to an approach which is to be very, very positive oriented, to raise children to look at things in a very, very positive sense, not to look at negative, not to raise children with negativities. It happens very often in the Jewish community that different groups will, because they want to be sure that their children will adhere to what the parents believe in, that they raise the children with certain negativities towards other groups. So I'm very conflicted, because on one hand, I think that's not a positive, not a healthy way to raise a child. Child should be raised with a positive outlook, with an eye in tow. On the other hand, sometimes our parents who raise their children to be somewhat cynical and maybe more discerning, so sometimes they are more successful in getting their children to follow exactly in the path that they want them to follow. So I'm very conflicted in how this works out, how this plays itself out. But at first glance, that could be one of the concerns we have. So Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus has another Mishnah, just a few Mishnayos later. And if you think about it, I think that they're very connected. So Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus says, the respect that you have for somebody else's esteem, the way he's perceived in the community should be as dear to you as your own esteem, as your own covet, as the way people relate to you. Don't be quick to get angry. Do tshuva one day before a person is called into their Ribono Shel Olam. So we never know when that's going to be. That means the tshuva all the time. And warm yourself up in the light, in the influence of the wise people of Chachamim. At first glance, it sounds like four different instructions, right? Four completely different instructions. Worry about a person's covet. Be easygoing. Don't get angry easily. Do tshuva every day, and be close to Chacham. But I was thinking that perhaps Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus is addressing the how we can achieve an ayin tov and not suffer from being maybe naive and discerning and maybe looking at everything in rose-colored glasses that may not be serviced in the best possible way. So I was thinking perhaps this is the pshat, that if a person wants to achieve an ayin tov, so it means doing various exercises. So as we said before, the Birchas HaGomel is an exercise. Being done like Odom L'Kaf Sechos is an exercise. When there is an opportunity, and this comes up very much so in child rearing, when there's an opportunity to see the good in somebody else, to see how you may have misjudged somebody, to stop and take advantage of the opportunity. The person made a mistake. We were unsuccessful and we were not done a person l'kafzuchos, we didn't look in a positive way. But afterward, right, after things worked out, you're able to see that you made a mistake. So that's an opportunity to stop and to introspect about it. And if we can share with the child, share with the child. Sometimes you have it amongst siblings, right? That one sibling will be done the other sibling in a negative way, but afterward, turns out that there were good things happening over there. Right? It could be that's part of having noach lichos. Don't be easily angry. Right? Something happens in the family, so very, very often the things that we get upset about did come about through good intentions. Very often when we get disappointed, it was because things are happening. A person was busy, a person was doing good things, whatever it is, was coming home late, coming back late, not being in touch, whatever it is. Very, very often it comes from there was something at the very, very core, something good was happening. If a person is not easy to get angry, it's part of training oneself. To be able to stop and to say, I'm upset, I'm disappointed, but the famous story, we made it famous, think about the Nikolsberger Rav, that for me is a memorable story that is an Erev Pesach story. When I get you nervous, kind of in the Purim, but the story of it's a very, very long story. Well, that somebody once came into the Nikolsberger Rebbe's home, also one of the great Admonim, the great Rebbe's, and said that they know there's something very, very special happened in this home. And after investigation, he finds out that there was one Erev Pesach, when one Leil Pesach, one Pesach night, when it came time to set the Seder table, and he sent his child to go upstairs to get the box of matzahs. So his child comes down with a box of crumbs. So he looks inside, and it's all that's left. So you know, the pachad, this is the central part of the Seder. This is the matzahs, the Rebbe's matzahs. We know that every matzah watched from the time that they were harvested. So you can imagine the Rebbe's matzahs and how he was careful to date them. Nothing left. So he starts trying to figure out, right, what happened. So the story is told that that day was their Pesach. Everybody was busy doing something else. And the lady that they had hired to watch the children, so she was helping out during the Seder. So she came, realizing that that something terrible was going on, and she explained that during the course of the day, there was no one home. She was the only one who was home. And one of the children was extremely hungry. Erev Pesach, it's very little to eat in the house, right? So everything was in the stove, but it wasn't ready to eat. Looking around, there's ingredients, but nothing. So she said, I looked high and low. I couldn't find anything to feed the children. They were starving. I waited. There was another hour, and no one came home. So I found these crackers. So I had to give the kids my teeth. So I took these crackers, and I gave them. So the story goes that the Rebbe turned to her and said, thank you very much for taking care of my children. In response to their crime. It's alti noach lichos. Something good happened over there. Right? But a person has to be able to stop, to hold back, to think something through, to have an eye in tow. These are exercises. That's, I think, what Rosemary Perkins was saying. That a person develops an eye in tow by being concerned about somebody else's esteem the same way that we're concerned about our own esteem. To look at somebody else in the same way that we see the entire picture of ourselves and see our good intentions. And if a person trains himself, or trains herself to be able to stop and say, you know, maybe what happened over here wasn't all bad, wasn't all disappointing, but there was something that good which brought this about. That is the way that a person, there are exercises that we have to develop an eye in tov. And then when we are able to see a good thing, when we're able to see that our respect for God's creatures is rewarded and is accurate, when we're able to see that the Baruch Hu takes care of us, then to be able to express it, to think about it, to talk about it. And do tshuva every single day. So I think what Rav Elazar Hurkinus is saying is that there's a danger to being such a positive-minded person. Right, there's a danger that we become totally morally relativistic, that everything is good, everybody is good, everything can be justified. Right? We can raise children to not to be discerning in any way. So he says, no, when it comes to yourself, when it comes to figuring out what's going on inside of you, so you think about it in terms of how Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to look at it. Have a shov yom echad of nemi sascha. Every day think about, how is the Kadosh Baruch Hu going to see me? When I have to explain this to Ribbono Shel Olam. So he sees the big picture. He sees what I could have done, what I should have done. So if a person is trained to always have, to always look at something in two fashions. to be able to have two in a bipolar way, that a person is able to look at other people and don lekaf sechus, but themselves, to look at themselves, how is the Kadosh Baruch Hu going to see this? How is the Rebbe Shlomo? He sees everything. Sometimes, when you think in those terms, life becomes much easier. Because the Kadosh Baruch Hu does see the pressures and the stress that we're under. Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't see just the deadlines, and he doesn't just see the things that people think we should have done. Kadosh Baruch Hu does see the whole picture. He does see what's going on in our hearts and our minds. He does see how sometimes things are difficult for us. So sometimes, when I think of Kadosh Baruch Hu, look at it, it'll be very good, it'll be great, it's much easier. That also is a way that a person can make sure that they have both, if a child grows up to see that we have two sets of standards, we have a standard by which we measure other people, and a standard for ourselves, then I think that could be a healthy way of growing up. And certainly, that a person should be trained, whether it's through stories or personal meetings, to be able to see how great people live their lives, how great people have achieved in the areas of midos, so then that certainly becomes very, very instructive and protects the person from becoming so positively minded as to not have a good moral compass. Let's close with that. A lot of this can be summarized by one very important Purim statement that the Gemara says. The Gemara makes a very strange statement. The Gemara says, "Chomon min haTorah minayin," that everything has a place within Torah. Right? Nothing that we can find is not. So where is Homan and Torah? So we say Homan and Torah. Homan is by Amalek. This is Shabbos Zohar. So Gemara says, no, you know we find Homan in the Torah? The word Homan, Homan's name. Hamin ha'eitz hazeh. Right? When the Nachash says to Chava, he says, Hamin ha'eitz hazeh. Right? Can you eat from this tree? So Hamin, hey mem nun, if you don't know the context, Haman. A very strange comment that Chazal should say you can find Haman in the word Hamin. So the Meforshim point out that what the Torah is pointing out to us, what Chazal is pointing out, is that Adam and Chava, the entire Gan Eden, they could eat from anything they wanted. Nechmod, Lamare, Vetel, Maskel, everything was delicious, everything looked great. They had probably such a wide range of fruits to eat from. There was one tree they couldn't have. Right? Haman or Russia, a tremendous amount of covet. Everybody was bowing down to him. Right? Achashverosh was giving him covet. He was head of Achashverosh, he was the most powerful person. Right? He controlled all the strings. There was one person, Mordechai, that got him aggravated. One person didn't bow down to him. So what Chazal are pointing out to us, Haman could have lived a very, very happy life. He had so much covet from all of his friends. Right? It wasn't even hard for him to accomplish his topical satisfaction. Right? But it's human nature to say that if there's something I can't have, I need to have it. Right? If I don't have the covet of Mordechai, it becomes the Jewish people, it becomes undermining me. So then, that one Kriya of Mordechai, that he didn't bow down, that's what ultimately brought Haman's demise. The same thing with Adam and Chava. Adam had everything in the world. One tree they couldn't eat from, right? So we don't understand the difficulty, we can understand the lesson Chazal is teaching us. That sometimes we can have everything, and what we don't have becomes so much bigger and so much greater. The midah of istapkus, the midah of being satisfied with what we have, which is ultimately at the core of being able to have a generous way of looking at things. We become generous people, and we become a generous perspective, and ayin tov, and what we have is enough. We don't need what other people have. When we have a munah that Kadosh Baruch Hu is providing, taking care of us, and when he provides for us, after Rosh Hashanah, that's what we need. So, the midah of the statkos, of being satisfied, is really a very deep idea in one's munah. And that's how we end up the story of Purim. The Purim story begins because there's one person, not just begin, but it's really advanced, because there's one person who cannot be satisfied unless he has everything, right? And the ultimate reaction of the Jewish people is, Mishloach Monos, Matonos Lavyonah, we recognize this idea. we recognize that part of our reaction is to see that how much ill and how much evil comes to the world because we don't work on ourselves to be satisfying, to be understanding of what we have, to be able to look at what we have b'ayin tov, to be able to see that Baruch Hu is providing so much for us. So at the end of Purim, one of the ways that we respond is, we have everything we need, we can give to Aniyim. Purim is the one day when we don't even ask the Aniyim who they are, what they are, because if they're supposed to have, they'll get, if we're supposed to have, we'll get, we just give to Aniyim without even asking. So one day, Mishloach Monos, we just provide for other people. Because we have to understand that one of the lessons, one of the moral lessons, one of the ways in which we grow, is to be able to develop this kind of an ayin tov. So again, I thank you for the opportunity to open up. It's a great comfort for me to be able to speak l'ilui nishmas Aviva Aryeh, and I think through these kinds of meetings throughout the Jewish community, there's no question that she will have a tremendous zechuyos, and her neshama will have a tremendous comfort, and Aliyah and Rav Hashem, her family will be able to take comfort as well to all of us. Thank you very much.